Sahana Vavatu, Sahana Bhunaku, Sahaviryan Karavavahai, Tejasvinavaditamastu Mavidvishavahai. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Okay, so page 85. Akura continued. You originally enunciated the ancient religious path of the Vedas for the benefit of the whole universe. Whenever that path becomes instructed by wicked persons following the path of atheism, you assume one of your incarnations, which are all in the transcendental mode of goodness, right? So this atheism that's talked about means you can have the aspect where they don't follow the Vedas, but you can still follow the Vedas and have that atheistic mentality. Atheism means it's not theistic. You don't see it in connection with the Lord. It's that simple. It's our approach. Theism means you see things in connection with the Lord, and atheism means you don't. Right? So you may have that basic faith that is there, and so then that's good. But it's also, you want to see that you know, in your religious process, you also see that connected to the Lord. Yes?
We see that even though we practice as devotees, and we claim we have faith, but to see everything in connection with Krishna, that's...
No, but that's our intent. So me, but you do have those where it's not their intent. You understand? Those who say we don't have to follow all these Vedic things, we can just use modern cultural elements and all that, and that's technically atheism, because where is the authority for that?
But their intent would be to please Krishna at the end.
At the end, but the process they're using is not theistic. It's not that. The Vedic's not available. They don't like to use it. Or we're Westerners. We don't know that stuff. Then why didn't you learn? You also didn't know that you're supposed to use toilet paper. You know, you were in diapers. You know, someone had to teach you. You know what I'm saying? So all this thing, you know, how you eat, how you do everything. You know, so they learn so many things, so why can't they learn this? I'm talking about the authority. I'm not talking about what they're doing.
I'm talking about intent.
Yes, but yes, the intent ultimately, but the method you're using. It's just like, let's say, just like I said, some, you know, Walla comes to the temple, meets the devotees for the first time, you know, and he's well situated in his, how you say, breaking of the four regulative principles, or at least three. Gambling is not so prominent unless he's into sports, you know, so he's, how you say, rooting for, what is it, was it Real Madrid or, you know, Arsenal or something, you know, then you have, you know, these kind of things. So then he comes to the temple. He hears from the devotees, and from hearing from the devotees, he has faith that, yes, he should respect the Lord and serve the Lord and everything he has offered to the Lord. So he's understood from that you offer whatever, you know, Krishna says, whatever you do, whatever you eat, whatever you, that offered to him. So then he goes home, and, you know, his non-vegetarian food and his, you know, how you say, alcoholic beverage, he offers that to Lord in all sincerity. Right? So that means then the Lord will accept that sincerity, but it's not that he accepts what you offered. You understand? So why not he accepts the sincerity and what you offer? That's what my point is. Is yes, the intent is there. He'll get the devotional benefit, but from that you can't say, see, you don't need to. We can just go on, you know, being malechas and yavanas and just our intent is to please Krishna. Right? Does that make sense? But as we see as he goes through, the fineness that's there in Krishna, since Krishna is in every atom, between every atom, so then you're going to have the aspect of there are fine points that we may be missing. You know, we don't see the fine aspects. Right? Because we would take it, you know, okay, everyone's born and bred, so therefore, then automatically they'd be with Krishna. But no, it's that you have to develop that desire to be with Krishna. You have all facilities. You have the spiritual world, the spiritual form. You have the eternal associates. So you have everything. So as long as you're continuing that progress, then naturally that will all go that way. But let's say, you know, it's nicer than what we had here. You know what I'm saying? It doesn't have the inconveniences of here. So what if we get distracted by that? You understand? That will then slow down our process. Does that make sense? You know, it's just like those gopis that are fully absorbed in Krishna, they didn't have children. You understand? But the ones who got distracted, they had children. You understand? So what does that mean? It means that they have gotten, everything's going nice. It is the spiritual world. It's great. But the point is it's about Krishna. You know what I'm saying? So as long as we take it, well, this is what I do, and just offering to Krishna is enough, then it just stays, well, then it's about what I do. It doesn't actually shift to, it's about what Krishna wants. That's the danger of it. So that's why we don't care where someone starts from, but are they progressing? Because we'll say, yes, of course, they're always remembering. Yeah, but if they're always remembering, why is it whatever they're doing is about themselves? They say, oh, but we're in the karmi world. In your house, you can do whatever you want. Eat whatever you want. Dress whatever you want. You know what I'm saying? I remember one devotee would say they were going to go back to their country, you know, on the northern side of the European kind of scene. And, you know, all their friends were there and they were saying, hey, you know, we're all going out for a weekend, you know, at the farmhouse, you know, because up in that area they all have a country house. It's just you have to have a country house. You know, you go do the sauna, do the this, do the whatever it is like that. And then the comment they immediately said is, man, I just don't want to look at a whole bunch of old naked people. Because from there, they go out there for that, everyone just walks around naked. Right? I even had one other devotee from that part of the world, next country over. I was talking with him, and he was saying as a kid, they were living on an island in the archipelago down there. And he says, you could walk around the whole lot, you're just naked. Nobody cared.
I mean, it's cold.
For them, that's like polar bears. Do they care? You know, so, you know, you're from there. They, you know, it's not like they're from within the tropics where they would actually understand it's cold. But my point is, this is summertime. In the wintertime, of course, they wear a little more. So they put on a jacket, right? You know, so. And some boots, probably. You know, hat. Yeah. So the whole point is that's their culture, and so but we don't go with that. You know, we adjust for what Krishna likes. So if we just put it on, no, you can do anything for Krishna. That's all right. Yes, the gopis can be involved in everything connected to Krishna. But what they'll do is specifically in connection with Krishna. Because that I've connected it to Krishna is not enough. I have to actually be, it has to be favorable to Krishna. Does that make sense? So that's why Kubja, she's connected it to Krishna, but it's still not on the same level as the gopis in Vrindavan. Because there it's about Krishna. Hers was about her desire, though it was in connection to Krishna, but the gopis it's just about Krishna's desire. You understand? So, yes, we start from wherever we are, whatever we can do, and however much we can think about Krishna, and keep that ultimate goal to please Krishna. And then we do the best we can, but we should not make excuses that, well, there's no need. We don't have to make, because then, why there's no need? Because Krishna won't be pleased by that, or it doesn't please us to do that. And if you check, it'll be that. You know, so that's then, is it about Krishna actually? So yes, ultimately it is, but then how much time that ultimate can be. So do you want to go back to Godhead? Or if not, then at least then we took birth in a family of practicing devotees. If not, do we want to end up on the heavenly planets? You know what I'm saying? And then you have to, you know, watch out. You're on the beach and then Gajendra with his folk come through and like that, and you got to move. You know, it's heavenly planets, but hey, he's bigger than you. You know?
And the switch will come by association?
By association. By an association that we want to develop that. We want to develop that, Krishna will put us in contact with that. You know, it's just like, we haven't met devotees that haven't taken up devotional service, but we have a thought. Well, what is actually going on? What is the absolute truth? Who am I? This kind of anything like that. Krishna will put you in contact with the bona fide devotees. If you actually want to know. If you don't want to know, he'll put you in contact with all those other guys that aren't bona fide. And they'll give you some answer and you'll be happy. Like that. So the whole thing is it's whatever you want. So if you want to maintain your material attachments, Krishna will let you. Like that. But then, you know, heavenly planets is next stop is heavenly planets. And then the problem is having gone to the heavenly planets, we have more of a taste for sense enjoyment. So when we come back here and it's not there, then our tendency will be in that direction. Now, if we get the association of the devotees, we do take up having been born then in, you know, aristocratic or religious or those kind of families, do we take it up? And if we do, then it'll move forward. If we don't, where do those families end up? Right? The grandfather's very, you know, they're well situated, very religious, very strict. You know, the son is doing okay, the grandchild couldn't care less. So where's it going? It's going the other way. So they're going down the cycle of samsara. Like that. But if someone comes into those families and then takes up Krishna consciousness and tries to apply, then they have a piety that it'll be easy for them, so they can move forward. You know what I'm saying? You know, so just like, you know, just as an example, if you grow up in a house where you have two separate kitchens because of the cooking, then to have a place in the kitchen that's for the offering and a place where you wash the dishes and it doesn't go in the kitchen, that's easy. You understand? But for everyone else, that's a freak out. That sink is the kitchen sink. It's the sink that, you know, everything that you wipe, you get the water for wiping the floor, pour that back in the sink, do everything goes on there. You need to scrub your shoes, it's done there. Everything happens in that sink. You know, and that's only, you know, I mean, if the bathroom was there, you'd use that, but that's upstairs, so, you know. You know what I'm saying? So for them, it's why do we have to follow all these? But for someone who's been in a strict situation, then what's the problem? Does that make sense? So that's the whole thing, is one has to see, is that the piety, if it's used to advantage to surrender to Krishna, then it's progressive. But if it's not, we think that it's because of that we're superior, or that all this is not really important, or things like that. Then Krishna will arrange, no, you don't have to do that. Had one devotee doing door-to-door sankirtan. I'm not sure where it was, but I kind of think it was France. But, you know, so then he said he met this guy, and when he met, he's kind of the front, you know, has the, like the, they kind of wear in the villages, they wear that, they have the shirt and they wear that vest. But the vest, the front of it was all kind of like smooth and shiny, but not everywhere, just some parts. And in the discussion as they're going through, the man was talking that his father hadn't washed his hands, you know, for, I forget what it was, like something like 28 years or something like that. And he was determined to, you know, do better than his father, you know, follow the line. So that was from just wiping his hands. You know, he does anything, wipes his hands and does. That, I don't know. He was so expressing that. I'm not sure if he explained that he took the book. Yeah, I had that once. I'm going along in Hong Kong. Hand out the book, and this guy's going along. He can't really tell because the crowds are there. And then, he's pushing this kind of cart kind of thing. And then he, you know, he's just there. He takes the book, looks at it like that, you know, and then I say, and then he hands it back and keeps walking. He was a butcher.
So, you know, and that, and then you notice there are things on the book, right? You hand that to the next guy.
Wipe it.
Yeah, wipe it on his pants. They just keep walking. Yeah, so, yeah, you do end up with that kind of... Fortunately, Krishna's like the sun, so... Okay. I just try to, means that's what sadhana's for. The sadhana, then we follow the sadhana, try to create that regulation, and that keeps us from getting distracted. Distractions will be there, but the point is that regulation makes it just go easier. And as we get purified, it becomes more and more stable.
Demigod worshippers, are also...
Demigod worshippers are?
They are also in the category of atheists.
They?
Also in the category of atheists.
It means it has that atheistic aspect. See, you have the point is what we're making. We're making two distinctions here. One is that they are moral theist means that they accept to follow the Vedas. But it doesn't mean that they're, so that's by religion they're theistic. But it doesn't necessarily mean by philosophy they're theistic. Right? So what we were talking about before with Monty's question, that was, is that we may be, philosophically we may be theistic, but in religion we're not. You know, so that was the whole point, because that's generally, you say, oh, no, we don't have to follow the rules and all that. But then, why would you not? You know what I'm saying? So that's the whole point, is that the point is you can get whatever path is instructed by which a person's following the path of atheism. That atheism doesn't necessarily mean that they're not following the religious principles. They may be following the religious principles, but their ultimate goal is not theistic. So they would be atheists. You know, it's just like in the paintings, Hiranyakashipu is following all the Vedic kind of programs, and you know, all the demons they're all following. Ravana, he has court, he's the king. When they, you know, about Hanuman, he wants to kill Hanuman, he says, you know, Vibhishan says, no, you can't kill a messenger, and this and that. So they're quoting from Shastra. Like that. So they accept the Vedic religion, but not the Vedic philosophy. Does that make sense? They make up their own. So therefore, then, you would have that. Does that make sense?
Yes. Maharaj, those people who have this theory of going against Vedic culture and still giving some type of Krishna consciousness, what they do to silence everybody is to show that we have made through this atheistic preaching 5, 10, 16 down chanting devotees, and they also do kirtan, and you know, so it's work.
Yeah, it means that's there, yes, then that's good, it's progressive, because the point is you've got half, so something will work. You know, it's just like if I give you half a meal, then, you know, it's better than no meal. And they've given the more important half of the meal. So, yes, just by that. But what it means is that at some point, then they'll surrender and actually follow the other part. If they remember Krishna, go back to Godhead, nice. But that's of no credit to their lifestyle. They're trying to credit their lifestyle that's made it. No, it's chanting the holy name has made them. Taking Bashad, chanting the holy name, associating with the devotees, the 5 main points of devotional service, that has made them devotees. Not there that, you know, we're, you know, all, you know, be American, buy American. That's not why they became devotees. You know, not at all. Does that make sense? You know. Oh, they'll be attracted because we have couches and all that. You know, everybody has couches. So unless you have a real knockout couch, no one's going to be impressed. But you come in and you have a nice sitting place on the floor and the bolster pillars and all the little things and low tables and nice things and pictures of Krishna, and you do it up nicely, then why they won't be attracted? So just like if you want to follow the Western, unless it's done really, really well, they won't be attracted. So it's not that it's Western they're attracted to, it's whether it's attractive that they're attracted to. That's the mistake. You know what I'm saying? Is that
yeah, people pay money to go watch, you know, this, the, you know, the Scottish marching band when it comes to town. Now, anybody in that town wears a kilt? No. Do they play bagpipes? No. But they pay money to go see. Right? And if afterward, no. And if those guys showed up in cargo jeans and you know, and singlet t-shirts with some stupid thing written on the front, you know, like that, would they be impressed? No, they'd probably walk out. But if they're there in their kilts and all the different things, and that's they've gone for. They've gone for the culture. In other words, they come to us. Why we wouldn't present our culture? Why do we have to present? Oh, we have a couch. You have a couch. We have a couch. Hey, we're buddy-buddy. It's kind of like, you know, I'm not sure. The guy that probably did, you know, the Chainsaw Massacre, he probably had a couch, you know? So it's not that's why people, oh, they become devotees because we don't give all that. No, you just didn't show that. Because you don't practice yourself. So you do what you can. So you can make a devotee like you. So you don't follow, they don't follow. But at least you chant, so then they chant. So you've done that much. So that's nice. But what about the religious, what about if Krishna says sarva dharma parityaja, when are you going to give up the Malecha religion? When will that be given up for Krishna? Because we're saying, no, we're going to stick to it. So that's not sarva dharma parityaja. And there's no scope for it. You understand? So that's the weakness, is that on the religious platform we don't accept, then that's there. So this is a unique thing that we can, like the Hindus, they accept the religion but not the philosophy. We've accepted the philosophy, not the religion. So it's just, you know, always have to do something different. But. So the point is wherever you start from there, that's not a problem. We're not complaining about that. But naturally, you would be open to adjusting things as time goes, because your heart becomes purified. If we're saying, no, we're from here, like that, but people change. You know what I'm saying? Like I mentioned, I was in the airport in London, and went into one shop or something, and the lady who was, you know, managing the shop, you know, elder lady, and that, you know, dressed nicely in that, and she came up to me and said, you know, commented about how nicely, you know, it's interesting the look and all that, and because of that, she asked about, she saw that there was this, you know, in the local area, they were having an Ayurvedic seminar on diet according to your bodily, what do you call it? Constitution. And she wanted to know if that was a bona fide thing, or if these guys were just doing it to make money. So she took it that we would be an authority in that, because we were kind of, you know, dressed in the Indian kind of stuff, so maybe we'd know. And so then we explained about this and that. You know what I'm saying? And the ones who are claiming, no, we can't do all that, no, people are doing that. Right? New Age means you accept the Indian stuff. You know what I'm saying? Just you don't wear as many clothes as they do in India. That make sense? Except for the Jains. Excuse me. The Digambars? Yes. Yeah, so. So that's the thing. It's totally inconsistent. So it's just attachment. So because it's not logically presented, though they'll try to present that it's very logical and we're educated and we're modern and we're all this and that, as if they're the only ones that are. So that makes sense.
Yeah. So such a theory will one day collapse because they're not having the culture, only the 16 rounds and it will kill them.
It'll go, because from 16 rounds, then if it's about imposing upon them, then why 16 rounds? Whatever you feel like it, since it's about Bhav. Remember that the Sahajiya line, its main principle is that we don't need rules, we don't need authority, we don't need regulation, we don't need any of that. It's just the mood. So it's not a strong position. You know what I'm saying? Like that. So we always have to be careful. That's why the Bhagavatam goes through these in detail to show where is the Krishna conscious and where is the lack. Does that make sense?
So yes, you have to be Krishna conscious, but it's about Krishna. Right? Did Dhritarasura say, well, I'm a demon, so I should harass Indra. You know, I shouldn't tell him about the Vrajra. Oh, he didn't use it. That's good for me, because I'm a demon. No, he was Krishna conscious. So the Krishna conscious thing to do was follow, please the Lord. The Lord wanted Indra to use the Vajra to kill Dhritarasura. Therefore, Dhritarasura, to please the Lord, is telling, convincing Indra, no, you should use that. Don't be puffed up and think that you're the doer, so therefore you use your club. Krishna told you to use the Vajra. Right? Done? Does that make sense?
Endeavors to preach, you know, usually when tattva and culture comes. So
which? Tattva and culture.
When culture, when it comes, we usually present the tattva, you know, and we keep culture secondary, because first let us introduce the tattva, so that once they're convinced, then we can introduce
yes,
the culture.
Yes, you can. But also, if you're working in an area, environment where people have the basic culture, then just talking the tattva, then that's all they generally deal with. Or the organization, all these different things, because they take it for granted. So you also have to see that. But what Drew's talking about is when you're in an environment where they don't have that inherent culture, you know, where they don't have any culture. Not even now, it's more modern. They probably have some yogurt in the fridge, but you know, that's about it. And a few of them will have make sourdough bread, so they'll have a sourdough culture in the fridge.
What would you suggest? Because first we do more tattva thing.
Yes, yes.
Once people become purified enough to hear about culture, then they become themselves interested in some parts.
Yeah, but you can also encourage.
Yes, and you encourage. But when you see that some parts are not working,
then you leave that.
Just
but
it back to the tattva?
Yeah, but then you but it means, in other words, you extend out, and when you see it doesn't. So the point is you're giving the principles of Krishna consciousness, but also in the culture.
I'm talking about more devotees who are practicing longer. It's not for new devotees and such.
Oh, then you just explain why they're doing it, what's the benefit of it, and then slowly it'll catch at some point. You know, so the point is that everyone's an individual, so they'll progress at their own speed in their own area. So some area that they're progressing nicely, but other areas may be very slow.
Yes.
So you focus on the areas that are progressing nicely. And then if these others will help, then you do. But if they don't catch it, then you leave it. You know, unless it's going to be have an effect on others, then you have to have some standards. But in their own private life, if they don't want to wash their, you know, hands or feet in their own house, then that's up to them. But when they come to the temple, then they have to. That's the standard. And if they don't want to do it, then don't do that. Don't worship the deities. You know what I'm saying? Because it's you're worshiping Krishna. It's the way he likes it.
Because what I've observed, that because of lack of culture in Japan, devotees, they create their own culture.
Of course.
And this culture, sometimes it's okay with the reality, and sometimes it's usually, you know, they're not much of their major points. They're just concentrated on, you know, the tactical actions. They're not very important, but they make it strong.
Because it's because if it's your own religion, you're more committed to it than if it's someone else's. You know, because it's about identity. So when you identify as servant of Krishna, then the religion that goes with that, then it'll be comfortable for you. But if you don't identify as servant of Krishna in a particular area, then you'll want to use some material religious process that you can relate to. And if you like some of the Vedic stuff, then nice. But if you don't, then you'll use your own. Because Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that. The conditioned soul has to have religion. So it's either you'll follow what the authorities give, or you'll make it up yourself. It's guaranteed. You know? And so anything that connects with the material intelligence, that will be preferred over something that requires spiritual intelligence. Does that make sense? Yeah. Okay.
So whatever the path becomes described by wicked persons following the path of atheism, that could be those who are opposed to the Vedic version or those who are opposed to Krishna consciousness. Like that. Does that make sense? It'd be both. Opposed to Krishna consciousness, and some would be following Vedic culture, some wouldn't. Right? Like you have the Daityas and the Dhanavas. Generally the Daityas follow Vedic culture, the Dhanavas may or may not follow. They're generally the more rough and ready guys. Yeah. Does that make sense? You are the very same Supreme Person, my Lord, and you have now appeared in the home of Vasudeva with your plenary portion. You have done this to relieve the earth's burden by killing hundreds of armies led by kings who are expansions of the demigods' enemies. And also to spread the fame of our dynasty. Footnote 37. The BBT purport mentions the term Sureta Ramsha Ragyam indicates that the demoniac kings slain by Krishna were in fact expansions or incarnations of the enemies of the demigods. This fact is elaborately explained in Mahabharata, which reveals the specific identities of the demoniac kings. Right? When Duryodhana, after he got caught by the Gandharvas and Arjuna freed him and all that, he was so distraught because he went there to show their opulence and how great they were. And the Gandharvas didn't appreciate that, so then they kidnapped him. And so Yudhishthira, Bhima was thinking, okay, good, nice, I like this. But then Yudhishthira said, no, they're family, that can't happen. So then they went and freed him. So he was so disheartened by this, because the reversal of the events, instead of being him being great and the Pandavas being down, they became the glorious ones, and the Duryodhana Adis, then they were disgraced. So then, he sat down to fast to death. And so then the demons came up and took him down to the lower planets and then explained to him that, no, you can't die. You have a very important work to do. He says you're here to defeat the demigods and that we're all here to support you. And then they mention which demons are which kings and everything like that. And so they either empower, they enter, they incarnate, like that, so something happens. And so that's then what Akura is talking about. Yeah? Today, O Lord, my home has become most fortunate because you have entered it. As the supreme truth, you embody the forefathers, ordinary creatures, human beings, and demigods, and the water has washed your feet, purifies the three worlds. Indeed, O transcendent one, you are the spiritual master of the universe. Right? So purifies the whole universe. When Trivikram then put his toe through the universe, covering the universe, and the Viraj come in, that's the Ganges, and it goes down through all three planetary systems, so it purifies everywhere. And so that you have that is there, and then if you, like in his house, he washes his feet there, then that water is also has that purifying effect like the Ganges. That's so footnote 30.
But it's interesting that Akrura speaks about it, and Krishna didn't get to Dvaraka yet, and this whole thing didn't happen yet.
But he's already killed Kamsa, who wasn't he Kalanami? Yeah, so I mean, it's just like that. And so then his brothers were, some kind of cohorts like that. And, so it's all going on. The BBT purport mentions, Srila Sita Swami has nicely interpreted Akura's feelings as follows. Akura said, my Lord, although I am a householder, today my home has become more pious than the forest where sages perform austerities. Why? Simply because you have emptied my home. Indeed, you are the personification of the deities who preside over the five sacrifices a householder must perform daily to atone for unavoidable violence committed to living beings in the home. You are the spiritual truth behind all these creations, and now you have entered my home, right? So, in other words, every householder is obliged to perform these sacrifices. But because Krishna is there in the home, then he's the perfection of all that. So then by connecting everything to Krishna, then the purpose of those five sacrifices is carried out.
And that makes it then even more auspicious than the forest where the sages are, because the sages are thinking about the Lord, meditating or following the scriptures, following the sadhana, but Krishna's not there. But here, Krishna's actually here. So even though it's a householder's house, it's more sanctified than the forest where these great sages are performing their austerity. Right? So when the householder then has the center of his house being the deity or Krishna, so cooks for him, does all these things for him, then all these five aspects, these five yajnas, these five sacrifices are taken care of. That's why it's important to follow the culture, otherwise you might not do it. And strangely enough, keeping yogurt in the fridge isn't actually one of them. Like that, you know. Does that make sense? But if you offer it to Krishna, then all those bugs that get killed, then, you know, like that, well, they actually don't get killed. They just sit in your stomach, right? But there must be other bugs that aren't supposed to be there, right? So, whatever. So you must do that. Okay, here, now he's going to mention them. The five daily sacrifices enjoyed for a householder are, one, sacrifice to Brahman by studying the Vedas. Two, sacrifice to the forefathers by making offerings to them. Three, sacrifice to all creatures, putting aside a portion for one's meals. Four, sacrifice to human beings by extending hospitality. And five, sacrifice to demigods by performing fire sacrifices and so on. It means every householder has to do those five every day if they're following the Vedic principle. Because if you don't do that, then all the variety of living entities that are killed in the house by lighting the fire, by sweeping, by using your NutriBullet, by using all these different things like that, then the grinding stone.
But they've been offered.
Huh? But that's the whole point, because it connects to Krishna, it's taken care of. But if you're not, you're just a karmakandi. If you don't do these five, you go to hell. Right? And so even if you're not a karmakandi, you're just a karmi. You know, Malecha, Yavana, they still have these five. They go to hell for these, because they don't do these. So it means all these living entities getting killed, you have to do these five sacrifices. So then we then do everything connected to Krishna. So we're cleaning the house for Krishna, right? You know, we're doing things connected with the water with Krishna, like that, the fire with Krishna. Like that, we take care of guests when they come, Vaishnavas and that, because of the service to Krishna. Like that. We feed other living entities that are there, like Prabhupada mentions, even if a snake lives in your house, you have to feed it. Like that. So that's all, this is all the things that you do. But we do these things connected to Krishna. We see him as connected to Krishna. So then all this is taken care of. We study the Bhagavatam, you know, it's given to us by the Acharya, so that takes care of that. Right, the forefathers, then we respect the parampara. That takes care of that. You understand? Otherwise, these have to be done. They're obligatory. It's not that, oh, well, if you're Hindu, you do them. If you're not, you don't worry about it. No, it's just the way it is. It's just like, you know, Hindus breathe air. They drink water. They eat food. So therefore, if you're not a Hindu, then you don't need to do any of these things, right?
Yeah.
Right? That's the thing. It's just, you know, you live in L.A. and you only breathe smog, so you don't breathe air. Yes. I've heard that the smog in Delhi is the worst in the world. They've actually beat Mexico City, which is a serious accomplishment. I mean, Mexico City's been the reigning champion for like the last 30, 40 years.
Yeah.
Right? You know, like that. So see, India is progressive. They're moving forward.
Regarding the forefathers, you know?
The forefathers.
Yeah. So it's a daily sacrifice also.
There's the daily, there's the bi-monthly, then there's the monthly, then there's, you know, like that, the yearly, all that things.
So much of importance is given to the pitras.
Yes, so that's why we give so much importance to the parampara. That's why we don't appreciate mental speculation. If you want to mentally speculate, then, you know, worship your forefathers.
And if we don't want to worship our forefathers,
then stick to following the sadhana as given by the acharyas. You know, in other words, the reason we're doing something is because the acharyas said it. This whole thing is we're doing it because, no, that's my background, that's what I do. That's not enough authority, because then you have to worship the forefathers. So, okay, if you do something, let's say, you know, you're from where? Lower Slobovia,
Okay? And so therefore your father and his father and his father, then they always did this particular thing. Then you have to worship them because that's where the authority of doing what you're doing comes from. Otherwise, then you switch, and then what's the authority given by the acharyas? And you follow that. Then by respecting the acharyas, offering obeisance to the spiritual master, you know, when you do the artik and all that, you're just going through the acharyas. Then that aspect is taken care of. But otherwise, if you're going to claim, no, we're here, then you have to do this. You have to worship the forefathers. It's not, oh, but no, but we don't follow. It doesn't matter. That's called sinful. Like that. Pious means you're grateful. Like that. So therefore, you have to do the, you know, how you say, make the offerings to, you know, George, Jack, Henry, you know, like that. Yeah. Yeah. So. Yeah. So, yeah, better keep it to our acharyas.
So to achieve like full benefit of doing that, do we have to recognize that we're doing that?
No, even if we don't, it means anything is the more you know, the more the benefit is. You know, it's not knowledge, it's the seeing the connection to Krishna. So the more we understand the connection to Krishna, the more we advance, so the more benefit you're getting. Like that. So the point is that we're committed to following the scriptures according to the directions of the acharyas. We deal with everybody properly. We try to take care of everybody nicely, you know, according to, you know, not sentimentally, but, you know, according to what's the duty. We take care of guests and we perform, you know, Harinam Samkirtan. That's the yajna in this age. So we're involved. So yes, it is taken care of, but then that has to be the focus. We can't say, oh, we do Samkirtan, we don't have to follow that, but I'm a Westerner, so I do all this. You can't do that. That doesn't make sense. You know? Does that make sense?
Yeah. Question comes about from Hindus. Hindus have become devotees. Is that about Shraddha? So the annual Shraddha that they perform. So, how advanced does that person have to be to give up that Vedic Shraddha ceremony and just focus on now the parampara?
Shraddha.
Yeah.
That answer your question? That's all you need. Before that, then you should be following. But once you get that faith that Krishna is the summum bonum, then you don't have to worship. But before that, if you don't have the faith, then, you know, then you should be worshiping. Yeah.
So, can we say then that because, you know, the devotees, they haven't advanced and they do not have that much faith?
You didn't catch the reference.
Yeah, we got it.
So then what was the reference to?
Shraddha.
Shraddha in the context of?
Devotees.
What formula were we using? Anyone? Did you catch it? What was the formula?
Have faith. If you have faith.
No, but why did we say Shraddha? You said at what point? So I said a point.
Shraddha.
Huh? Shraddha, but in context of what? What's
Shraddha?
Huh? Shraddha to Prema.
Yeah,
so Shraddha is the first step. You just decide that, yes, Krishna is the supreme. I'm surrendering to Krishna from that point. Because after that, there's Sadhu Sangha, then Bhajana Kriya. So I'm saying from Shraddha, you're not obliged anymore. So then if you're saying, well, the devotees know, but they don't have that kind of... And that means then, are these devotees you're talking about initiated? Are they second initiated? Do they happen to be running the movement? You know, like that. So the whole point is that they're way past that point. So they don't have to worship. Now, if they maintaining mixed faith, that they have faith in the rituals and faith in the Krishna consciousness, that's a mixed devotee.
Yeah.
But that's not because, oh, they're not on that level. It means that the newest devotee can function on that level. It's just a matter of faith. You know, so if they want to do, nice, do it. Why not? It's not a problem.
You know, as long as they're offering sweet rice, they're offering, you know,
rhino fish.
Yeah, those kind of things. You know. Unless they went out and shot the rhino themselves, you know, then they can do that. You know what I'm saying? So the whole point is that yeah, I think porcupine also works. So anything that they are offering, that you can't offer. Can't offer cows, can't offer pigs, can't offer, you know, anything that's chickens, anything from the village. It's got to be, you know, how do you say, forest goods. You know what I'm saying? So that's just mixed devotional service, that's all. So if that's what they do themselves, then fine. If it's a matter of they're living in a joint family where only their devotees and others aren't, then the family expects that you do it. But the point is you'll offer prasad. So then you're actually benefiting more than the ritual that they're performing does. You understand? So then, like that can go on. That's not a problem. But if you don't have the other family things, obligations, why would you do it? You know, does that make sense? Okay. What learned person would approach anyone but you for shelter when you are the affectionate, grateful, and truthful well-wisher of your devotees? Right? So he always reciprocates. He has that gratefulness. So that aspect has to be seen, is that he reciprocates. Why would he say, as you surrender, he reciprocates? It means he appreciates. Right? Because it's not a business deal. It's not that you're offering him something that he really needs. That you know, that handful of Ganga water, it's like, wow, he was so thirsty. He was dying without that. Right? You know, so, yeah.
Sometimes we've noticed that the difficulty with Krishna's reciprocation, we expect it in a certain way and also in a certain frame of time.
Yes.
But here we see he came much later to Kubja and to Akura, and even to the gopis he came back. But that was a long period of time. So in that sense, devotees, you know, they feel it's like it's not happening. We're already practicing for 1 week and it's not there yet. So then people just, you know, deviate or come back to their normal kind of
But everything
routine.
Takes time. You want to buy a house, right? You take out a mortgage.
30 years.
Yeah. So then it takes time. You know, you decide, okay, you want to be a neurobrain surgeon so that you can get, you know, $2 million a year for your work. But how long will that take? Because you already had to be starting from, you know, junior high school, you know, getting, you know, straight, you know, 4-point average. And then you get into the good school, then you do that for whatever it is now, 4 or 5 years. Then you do your internship, then you do your generalization, then you do your specialization, and then, you know, when your teeth are falling out, then you get your $2 million.
Right. Put the teeth.
Yeah, then you put the teeth in. Then you got the money to pay for them put back, right? Then you just have it all replaced, yeah. So like that, is that it takes time. Anything takes time. You know, it's just like you see these, you know, well-to-do elderly persons with the fancy car, fancy watch, fancy this, fancy that. How long have they wanted that? Yeah, it wasn't that he turned 60 and he decided, hey, why don't we get one of those, what is it, Philip Patek watches, you know, like that. He wanted that since he was 20. Now he got it. You know what I'm saying? So the whole thing is there. You know, the example given also that the Upanishads give, or the, is that the girl, she gets married, she wants the kid immediately, but she has to wait. Right? It takes time. Kids don't, you know, it's not instant or something. Pour it in the cup, let's mix it up, poof, kid, you know, like that. So it all takes time. Everything takes time. And the better it is, the more time. So since Krishna consciousness is the best, it takes time. But he said, after he finishes his, you know, that initial business, then it'll come business. So he finished that. You know.
it's just that takes time. Everything takes time.
Okay. What learned person would approach anyone but you for shelter when you are the affectionate, grateful, and truthful well-wisher of your devotees? To those who worship you in sincere friendship, you reward everything they desire, even your own self, yet you never increase or diminish. It is by our great fortune, Janardana, that you are now visible to us. For even the masters of yoga and the foremost demigods can achieve this goal only with great difficulty. Please quickly cut the ropes of our illusory attachment for children, wife, wealth, influential friends, home, and body. All such attachment is simply the effect of your illusory energy, right? So they're seeing that they may have these attachments, these and that, or they may not, but they just see that they work in these areas, so then they're comfortable in that. So any illusion that may be there, that may be removed. So therefore, as sadhakas, then we have attachments in these areas. These are standard areas. Right? Children, wife, wealth, influential, friends, home, and body. You know, it's pretty standard. And so then that we may lose that attachment for that. He doesn't say that, you know, let me lose all these things. He just says, let me lose the attachment for these things. Right? Because as long as it's their duty, they function in that capacity. So does that make sense? So it's not a problem working with, because the point is that you work with Krishna. All there is Krishna. It's just that we're working with Krishna, he's everything, but only certain things of the everything do we claim as ours. Like that. So then that's where you have to focus a bit.
Likely to claim more.
Yeah, you have to be reasonable. Like, you know, that house next door to the right, you wouldn't want to claim that. You want to be reasonable, right? Srila Sanatana Goswami comments. I have attained what cannot be obtained. Now have special mercy on me with a wealth of bhakti, right? Because that's the real wealth. Because that's eternal. Everything else comes and goes. Right? You have money, you have it, but now then what's the point of having money? Why should you have money? To enjoy. But then to enjoy, then what happens?
You need money.
Yes, no, but I'm saying you have money and now you want to enjoy. What's the process?
You have to spend
the money. So that means it's always coming and going. So either we don't have money or we don't have enjoyment, you know, or we don't have both. We're working for the money so we can enjoy, you know. We got a long-term plan here, you know, seeing the future. So that's the whole thing, is that these things will always come and go. So bhakti, that is an eternal wealth that doesn't go away. Love for Krishna, that doesn't go away. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Don't we enjoy? Thinking the money will come, that's one question.
We start with the enjoyment. But are we doing the activity that should generate the money, or we're just enjoying?
No.
Okay, we'll take it as the... The whole point is this. Is that enjoyment connected to Krishna? Are we seeing it connection to Krishna?
Because samanya, yes,
huh?
Connected, but we are the
person. Yes, so then it will give a lesser degree. We'll see the money element will go less, but there is a connection to Krishna, and then yeah. Oh Lord, you are requested, Ardhana, by the devatas like Brahma, Jana, to be visible to them. You are very rare. You are rarely seen directly in the heart by the master of samadhi, like the Kumaras, Yogeshwarahi, and those who teach the Kumaras, persons like Brahma, Sureshwarahi. Or you are rarely attained by the greatest of bhakti yogis, who are the greatest devatas. Identifying themselves as devatas is an obstacle to seeing you, right? So even though they're great devotees, they identify like Brahma. He identified as Brahma. That's why then the whole Brahma Vimohan Leela. He just was heard Krishna's doing his pastimes, and as a devotee went to see, then the pastime would have unfolded differently. But because he's thinking he's Brahma, and so then he's going to test and all that, then therefore it worked out differently. And so but the end, then he sees himself, he's just a servant of the Lord.
Does that make sense? So the devotional element then, you know, comes out prominent. So we have to see that we don't get distracted by all these things, because the distraction comes from these things. You know, it says, you know, please quickly cut the ropes of our illusory attachment for children, wife, wealth, influential friends, home, and body. Right? These are where the attachments are. These are where the distractions come. It doesn't say, please quickly cut the ropes of our illusory attachment for taking out the garbage, you know, before 6 a.m, you know, on Thursday. It doesn't say that, because no one has that problem. Does that make sense? Yeah. However, you are visible in my house because of your mercy, or that you have appeared in my house is just good luck, drishtya. It is our great fortune. Please quickly cut the ropes of illusion concerning sons, etc. They are called ropes because they are binding and hard to escape. You can do this easily since it is your maya. Apta refers to friends and adi refers to dharma, etc.
Mercy and luck wouldn't be the same.
It just depends on what side you want to look at it. Mercy is coming from the Lord. It's our luck that the Lord is merciful upon us. That's the part that says the causeless mercy. You know, somehow or another, because he doesn't have to come to the house, but he did. You know, service is rendered, and that's the point. That's why he says that point before. What learned person would approach anyone but you for shelter when you are the affectionate, grateful, and truthful well-wisher of your devotees? So because he always does reciprocate and this and that, but he'll reciprocate when it will be appropriate. You know, just like your example before, the time. So we're looking at it from our position, but now we could take that and make an adjustment to that. Is that we're saying that, you know, like you had said, we're looking for a particular result in a particular time frame, in a particular volume, in a particular situation, you know, in a, you know, like this, yeah, particular experience. But now let us just shift that a little bit. What are the kids expecting? Right? The same thing. But as adults, you know that sometimes it's reasonable, sometimes it's not. So some things may come immediately because it works nice, the mentality's nice. Other things is they may have, you know, it would be a good thing, but the mentality's wrong. Or they have a good mentality, but they don't have the, you know, how you say, the maturity or that yet for that. So it all in good time, all these things, as much as the parent can provide, they will give. But it'll be on the time frame according to what the parents say. And so for the kids, it's taking forever, you know, like that. But in reality, is it, you know, like that? You know, it takes some weeks, some months, maybe a few years. But in their time frame, it looks like a lot, you know. They're 8 years old, and it'll take 2 years. That's 25% of the life, you know. So for us, then, you know, that would mean, okay, you know, that may be X amount of years. Does that make sense? You're saying, oh, two years, what's the big deal? But, you know, it may be that their 2 years is equal to our 10 years or our 15 years, or, you know what I'm saying? So that's the thing. Or if they're even smaller, it's like, you know, how you say, if they're 4 years old, 1 year is 25% of their life. So it's like forever. Yeah. So it's the same principle. It's just that there's a maturity up to a certain level, but then Krishna knows the whole total picture. So he's even more mature. That's why he said he's grave. And all that. You know, that gambira, something like that. That depth and all that. He knows the whole thing. So, yes, he's arranging, but at the appropriate time. And in such a way that if there is any material consideration, that will be removed in the process. So we'll get what we want, but the desire for that thing will be removed.
that the same?
Because I was thinking also, if we put our focus on Prayojana, so the period of waiting period, it's quite painful.
Yes.
However, if we engage in Abhideya,
yes,
it's not as painful.
Exactly.
Because we keep ourselves busy,
yeah,
somehow.
And you're applying that Abhideya with the Sambandha Gyan.
Yeah.
So then it balances all out. Yes, that has to be. Because you can only see, Abhideya means it can give you the result. That's the whole point, is that that's the problem in the modern. They think that they're performing Abhideya, but they're not, because what they do doesn't produce the result they say it will. It's just, does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah, they're just doing something, you know, it's like kids do all kinds of things and they think that that will make it all happen. And on the pretend level, it's fun. But on the real level, then it's not, you know, because they just have fun because it's pretend, you know. And so, as they grow up and they start to see actually what the reasoning process is and all, then it can be done in a mature way. But if not, then they'll just go on with this pretend and think that the whole world should work the way they want it. So it's just a matter of maturity. So we may be materially more mature than the children, but spiritually we're not. You know, it's just like Jarabharat called Rahugana immature, you know, like that. But on the material platform, as far as, you know, karma went and that, he was very mature. He was a king, so he was good. If he's able to go on a pilgrimage down to Sagar, you know, Dweep, then that means his kingdom's doing all right. It's not that as a war coming up and you decide to step out for a little vacation to refresh yourself, you know. So it's going fine. But we see is that he's not that mature in the higher understandings because he's very proud. He's good, but he's proud. So that's not as mature as someone who's good and not proud. And which is not as good as someone who besides that, not being proud, then sees themselves, everything in connection with Krishna. So that's the aspect, is that, yes, it's here, but when it comes to the spiritual, then we're starting from the beginning. But the point is as you surrender, Krishna reciprocates. So the greater the pace of surrender, the greater pace of the reciprocation. Verses 28-36. Krishna deputes Akrura to visit Hastinapur. Srila Sukadeva Goswami continued, thus worshipped and fully glorified by his devotee, the Supreme Lord Hari smilingly addressed Akrura, completely charming him with his words. The Supreme Lord said, you are our spiritual master, paternal uncle, and praiseworthy friend, and we are like your sons, always dependent on your protection, sustenance, and compassion. Exalted souls like you are the true objects of service and the most worshipable authorities for those who desire the highest good in life. Right? So the whole principle is they're working on dharma here. But we see Zakuru is working on the dharma being applied with that aspect of Aishwarya. Right, because he's the Supreme Lord. And now Krishna is applying the same religious principle, but because he's back the other way, it brings out the other element of the relationships and that sweetness. You understand? Because they're going to go the one way, and then he'll bring it back the other way.
Mm-hmm. Can we say that with the superior, it's always a descendant thing? So you always wait for them to change the mood?
Yes. I mean, if you can function in a way as that is done in an appropriate thing, you can try to adjust the mood if it will be bent, but it has to be it's beneficial for the senior person. You know, like, let's say something happens and they get, distressed, so then you say something that'll lighten the mood or change the topic or like that, but for their benefit. But if it's just for your own benefit, no, you wouldn't do that.
Maharaj, is it that Krishna will always get back? the relationship factor into the picture more than
And it's not a matter of that. He reciprocates them on how they deal, because when he was offering all the worship and all that, he's reciprocating that. So he's worshiping him as the Supreme Lord. He's reciprocating as the Supreme Lord and accepting it. But now you have the pastime, so now he's going to carry on with the pastime. And then he's going to take it into that way. So what we're pointing out is that it goes back and forth. So he had taken it one way, now Krishna's taking it the other. Because you see sometimes with the gopis, then he takes it the other way. They've come there in that personal interaction, and then he starts talking philosophy. You know, so it's the taste of just the interaction. You know what I'm saying? Because it's about Krishna, then just that being on the taste of interaction works nicely. But if it's about ourselves and about the taste that we'll get, then that's always going to be a disturbance. You're exactly with other people who are exactly in the same mood, and it works for them also. It can function. But as soon as that changes, it won't work. So that's why then if it's centered on Krishna, then it can always function. So. Exalted souls like you are the true objects of service and the most worshipable authorities for those who desire the highest good in life. Right, because it pleases Krishna, so therefore. Demigods are generally concerned with their own interests, but saintly devotees never are. No one can deny that there are holy places with sacred rivers, or that the demigods appear in deity forms made of earth and stone, but these purify the soul only after a long time, whereas saintly persons purify just by being seen. Right? Because the others, you see, you have to take bath, you have to do the worship, you have to do all the different things, so just by seeing, then one's purified. Right? You are indeed the best of our friends. So please go to Hastinapur and, as the well-wisher of the Pandavas, find out how they are doing. We have heard that when their father passed away, the young Pandavas were brought with their anguished mother to the capital city by King Dhritarashtra. And that they are now living there. Indeed, weak-minded Dhritarashtra, the son of Ambika, has come under the control of his wicked sons. And therefore, that blind king is not treating his brother's sons fairly. Go and see whether Dhritarashtra is acting properly or not. When we find out, we will make the necessary arrangements to help our dear friends. So we see is that this aspect is done now. He's taking it on to another aspect of the pastimes. So now they've situated now Mathura and now they can start to extend out. So he killed Kamsa, then reestablished all the family members from Mathura back there. And now that that's all established nicely, he's taking care of the residents of Vrindavan, he's taking care of those obligations that he mentioned there. He, you know, went to his parents' place, he got educated. So all those kind of aspects are done. Now he's moving the pastime on to some other aspect, and then now including the Pandavas. Srila Sukadeva Goswami concluded, thus, fully instructing Akrura, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Hari, then returned to his residence, accompanied by Lord Sankarshan and Uddhava. Conclusion. Krishna's transcendental mercy is never denied to anyone who has rendered service unto him, whether through lust, anger, fear, or pure love. Therefore, in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, it is stated that if one wants to serve Krishna and at the same time wants to satisfy his own lusty desires, Krishna will handle the situation so that the devotee forgets his lusty desires and becomes fully purified and constantly engaged in the service of the Lord. Krishna always tries to please his devotees as much as the devotees try to please Krishna. Right? So how much we're doing things to please Krishna, Krishna will reciprocate. So that could be another, means how we would look at it, means when you're talking to someone else, then we'll, as we discussed before. And then some of that for ourselves. But we can also look at it that if Krishna's not reciprocating, maybe it's because I'm not actually doing so much for his pleasure. I'm doing it for mine. So therefore, he reciprocates what you do for him. So if I'm doing it for myself, then what's to reciprocate? Does that make sense? So like that. One could use that also as a point. So but he always tries to please his devotees as much. So as the devotees try to please him, then he'll always reciprocate that. So that's why then that aspect of the prayojana, there the aspect of the prayojana is pleasing Krishna, not getting the particular physical or experiential result that we're looking for. It's a matter of pleasing Krishna, because if we're focused on pleasing Krishna, then these other things will come anyway. You know, in trying to always please Krishna, then prema is a natural, you know, aspect of pleasing Krishna. But if we're just looking for, you know, the ecstasy that we'll get from that, or the removal of the pain of the material world, like that, those kind of forms, then those might be slower in coming, because the actual point of pleasing Krishna is the prema. So, and that is because that pleases him. So it's a matter of the prayojana has to be is what Krishna's getting out of it rather than what we're getting out of it. So if we're looking at what we'll get out of it, then how much is about Krishna, Krishna will reciprocate. When it's about Krishna, then all these others can come very easily, because they're not actually a very major thing. For us, they're major when we're attached to them. When we're not attached to them, they're not a major thing. So that's the problem, is when we want them, technically we're not qualified to have them. And when we've given up that desire for them, and we're only seeing how things can be engaged in Krishna's service, then we're qualified to use them. So that's the difficulty. We want to have it and enjoy it. When it's either you enjoy it, you can't have it, and if you have it, you just use it for Krishna, and that's your pleasure. You know, because we are working with energy. Right, Krishna is there in your heart. You already have him. Right? But we're working with the energy. The things that we want are actually the energy. And energy has, you know, is that here? Okay. Does that make, that's why it takes longer. Okay. Chapter 49. Akura's mission in Hastinapur. Pratigya. One should not blame the Lord for the wrong application of his free will. That means one's own free will. One should not blame the Lord for the wrong application. So you see, it carries on from the. It means, in other words, the one chapter the discussions come up naturally bring up these, so then the next chapter then works with. Huh? Yeah. No, he always has the. Yeah, because that'll come up. What is it? Something Dhritarashtra. The chapter. It's a three-page, very short chapter. Just about how he can understand everything about Krishna, but he can't follow it because of his attachment to his son. I can't remember what it's called. Is it unfortunate or something? I can't remember what it is. Ill-motivated Dhritarashtra, yeah. But he knows the philosophy. He knows Krishna's God. He knows he's the supreme. Everything works according to his will, but because of his attachment, he's just hoping, well, maybe it'll work out. It's not intelligent. That's why they say he's blind. Huh? It's coming, okay. Adhyaya Pakashi. This chapter describes how Akrura went to Hastinapura, saw Dhritarashtra's unfair behavior towards his nephews, the Pandavas, and then returned to Mathura. On the order of Lord Krishna, Akrura went to Hastinapura, where he met the Kauravas and Pandavas, and then set about to find out how Dhritarashtra was treating the latter. The task would keep Akrura in Hastinapura for several months. Vidura and Kunti Devi described to Akrura in detail how Dhritarashtra's sons, envious of the exalted qualities of the Pandavas, had tried to destroy them by various evil means and were contemplating further atrocities. They've already tried and they're contemplating more, right? With tearful eyes, Kunti Devi asked Akrura, "Do my parents and other relatives, headed by Krishna and Balaram, ever think of me and my sons? And will Krishna ever come to console us in our distress?" Then Kunti Devi began to chant Lord Krishna's names for her protection, and she also chanted mantras expressing surrender to him. Akrura assured Kunti Devi, "Since your sons were born from demigods like Dharma and Vayu, there's no reason to expect that any misfortune will befall them.
Rather, you should be confident that very soon they will receive the greatest possible good fortune. Akura then delivered to Dhritarashtra the message from Krishna and Balaram. Akura told the king, "You have assumed the royal throne after the death of Pandu. Seeing all equally, which is the religious duty of kings, you should protect all your subjects and personal relations. By such fair behavior, you will gain all fame and good fortune. But if you act otherwise, you will obtain only infamy in this life and condemnation in a hellish existence in the next." Right? Because even today, 5,000 years later, we're still making comments about Dhritarashtra. Does that make sense? So that's the point. You know, it will attain only infamy in this life. A living being takes his birth all alone, and alone he gives up his life. Alone he enjoys the fruits of his piety and sin. If one fails to understand the true identity of the self and instead maintains his progeny by indulging in evil deeds, then surely he will go to hell. One should therefore learn to understand the unsteadiness of material existence, which is like a sleeper's dream, a magician's illusion, or a flight of fancy, and should thus control his mind in order to remain peaceful and equipoised. To this, Dhritarashtra replied, "I cannot hear enough of your beneficial words, O Akura, which are like the sweet nectar of immortality. But because the tight knot of affection for my sons has made me biased towards them, your statements cannot become fixed within my mind." Right? So it's not that he doesn't appreciate, because he's known as a Rajarshi. He's well studied in the scriptures and everything. He knows what's correct. And on anything but it's connected to his sons, he does everything properly. But when it comes to his sons, then if they want to do something that's not right, then somehow or another, they're quite happy to go along. No one can transgress the arrangement of the Supreme Lord. His purpose for descending into the Yadu dynasty will inevitably be fulfilled. So he knows it'll happen, but he's still attached, and just an illusion, he goes on. Knowing how the mentality of Dhritarashtra, Akura took permission from his dear relatives and friends and returned to Mathura, where he related everything to Lord Krishna and Lord Balaram. Right? So he goes, he sees, talks with everybody and this and that, and when he feels that he's actually assessed the whole situation, you know, which, like I said, takes months, then he goes back and then relates. Yes.
I'm just thinking that the modern scholars would, you know, studying the story, would command is that he has a weak character because he never had a father. That's why he is who he is.
Oh, Dhritarashtra. Oh, okay. But he had Bhishmadev taking care. So you had that authority. But, yeah, they can say all kinds of things. That's the problem.
Well, it's an obvious connection.
That's there, but there's also the aspect of him being blind. So being blind means you're dependent. You can't function on your own.
If you're insecure.
Yes. So there naturally then what is close to you, what is that, then you're attached to that because that's all you have. You don't know beyond that. You can't see. So therefore his sons also then would be a natural source of support for him. So that's why it says that a blind king can't be king. So it's not just that he can't see, but it's also that aspect that he will have a mentality. You know, it's just so these different physical things have a particular mentality that goes with them. You know, it's just like you see in that pastime with mantra. Hunchbacks, then they look at everybody in an analyzing and envious kind of way. It's just their nature. That's why they're like that. Because they're always like that. So then people will see them and kind of not deal, because that mentality is not right. So it manifests physically. And so therefore then it carries on. Because you see, they generally tend to do that. It's not that they have to, but you know, how you say, you know, the Notre Dame guy was nice, but you know, but the whole point is that you get purified by that. So because people will look at you in a not nice way, then if you don't look at them back, you'll get purified. So if you take that humble mood, all the reactions to that will be purified. It'll go
It'll go. And then next life, you won't have that problem. So. Hmm? Oh, I thought you were going to ask about Quasimodo. Okay. No, it's just he knows. That's the thing in the Vedic culture. You can know about God but not care. You know, it's just like the criminal. Do they know about the government and police and all these different things, but do they care? No. But it's not that they don't know. So we generally take it that, you know, atheists, they don't know. It's just they don't care. They don't connect it back to them. They're not worried about it. You know, they have their own, it's not that Hiranyakashipu didn't accept that Vishnu existed and that he was powerful and that he controlled everything. He just thought he was so powerful he could control Vishnu. But, you know, he understands Vishnu controls everybody else, but he just thought he was special so he could actually control him.
It's a matter of knowledge rather than devotion.
Yes, it's not realized knowledge, it's just knowledge. And so they'll only apply what they want, how they want. So he applies for managing the kingdom, he does very well. But when it comes to dealing with his sons, then he favors them. And because of that, because it'll be a personal weakness, it will have an impact on the kingdom. Like that. You know, it's like, yeah.
When the sons are involved in
yes, but even otherwise, it's just he can't, he because he's involved with the kingdom, therefore it'll have an effect. You know, does that make sense? So in this case, his personal life does affect everybody else's life. And so in their private quarters, then he dots on Duryodhana and this and that, and it doesn't affect outside of that. They perform their duties, and you'd say they're attached, and it's unnecessary or excessive, but if it's not affecting everything else, then you leave it. But in this case, it's affecting because Duryodhana wants things in his own way, which are impossible to attain. He wants to defeat the Pandavas with Krishna, which is impossible. They tell him, they're Narayan Rishi. Right? When the demigods and the demons are fighting and the demigods can't defeat the demons, two people come, Narayan, and they defeat them all. The one with his bow and arrow, one with the chakra, and that's it, finished. And so that's a whole army of demons, let alone just one guy, or one guy with his 99 brothers, you know. So throw in Karna also, and Shakuni. Okay. Right? You know,
less than 108.
Yes, less than 108. So it hasn't reached auspiciousness yet, so. Like that. Therefore, it's just due to their attachment, their illusion. So that's the thing. You can have knowledge, but the ability to apply the knowledge, that's vijnan, that's wisdom. So we have the knowledge and we can use it, then that's what we want. So that's the difference in the Vedic academy, is that you gain the knowledge and you use it. Like Prabhu was saying, you focus on Abhideya. You have the knowledge, but the knowledge is, it's not because I have the knowledge that makes the greatness. No, it's that I have the knowledge, now I can apply it. From this knowledge, applying this knowledge, now I get the results of pleasing Krishna. That's what it's for. But the modern academy is just, I have the knowledge and that makes me special. And that's it. They never apply the knowledge. You can say they do, but do they? Professors sitting at the university, are they applying their knowledge? No. Now and again, they may have a sabbatical, they'll spend some time, they go out, maybe do something like that. People who do that more, they'll be better teachers. But the point is the academy doesn't require it. So it's only gyan. They never get the big gyan. They never practice it. So there's no abhideya. So there's no real prayojana. The only benefit to all their knowledge is that they get paid for being there and teaching classes. That's it. You know, so it means that the guy that drives the plumber gets more than him. So if it's the knowledge that gets you the money, then the plumber gets more money for less knowledge and time. So he's getting that money from earlier. So you had to spend until you were in your mid-20s or late 20s to get to that position, and then you have to go, and then all this. So you're in your 30s, 40s, finally. But this plumber when he was 20 years old, he was making more money than you. So then, if that's the whole point, then the plumber's better.
If you don't have to deal with whatever the plumber is, but the professor doesn't have to deal with whatever plumber deals with.
Yeah, he has to deal with 300 crazy, teenagers that couldn't care less about what he's teaching. Plumber's starting to look good, right? May not have the social prestige, but who cares? You got the car, right?
Maharaj, as you go up the ladder, the number of crowd decreases.
The number of crowd?
Yeah, in the sense, maybe class 11, 12, you may have 100, 200 students, but then as you teach postgraduates, PhDs, then it becomes 30, 10.
No, lectures, there's 300. 300 is the standard.
Yeah, in U.S.
All in Europe and U.S. Mm. Yeah, the lecture halls are 300. They sit 300.
India is 40 for the PhDs, postgraduates.
Oh, maybe postgraduates, but the undergraduates. But who are the professors teaching? Generally the undergraduates. The other ones, they'll do that. That's not generally a full-time activity. They'll have some mentors that they take care of. But full-time, then they're generally doing the other aspect. But if they are able to do that, then that's a little better. But still.
Kripalad was mentioning 400 students.
Because another professor in his class. Yeah. They had to combine two classes because the other professor got sick or something.
Yeah.
Met his destiny with a Mack truck or something.
In university also, first year they have
huge
number. In engineering, first year they have a huge number of students.
Yeah.
Then when they get into specialization.
It goes down, yeah.
Specialization goes down. Yes.
Yeah, but still, you want to deal with all that? So.
Yeah,
But if we take that's an okay thing, but then if we apply that across the board, so that means the older the child gets, actually the better it is.
Yes.
But for most, they kind of like the younger, the more dependent, more this and that, because the older you get, they're not dependent anymore. They can put on their own pants and stuff, brush their own teeth. Yes. This depends on the teacher.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Sarva Veda Bhaktivedanta ki, Chaitanya Gaura Prabhupada ki.